We're back. You're listening to Fine Lines. It's produced in the studios of CFUV-FM at the University of Victoria. This week and next, we're featuring the work of Seattle's Joseph Kepler, 10254 35th Avenue Southwest, Seattle, Washington, 98146 USA. And his phone number is area code 206-937-8155. I'll repeat that again at the end of the show.
It's language. You and me, we. Winpo. 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 Wind. 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 Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm saying I'm broke. I don't have no money. I don't have any money. I'm hungry. Do you understand what I'm saying? I don't have any money. I don't have any food. Do you understand that? I can't get around. I don't have money for the bus. Do you understand that? I gotta walk. My kids are hungry. Do you understand that? I don't have any money. No work at all. It's all gone. Things break. Everything's falling apart. It just went. I don't have any money anymore. I don't have any food anymore. I go from day to day. Do you understand that?
Yes.
Argument abstract. Then one night full of drink and joke, bang, love goes nuts. Windows break, plants fly, mud splats on the rug, furniture's hurled across rooms, drawers are smashed in a pile, shelves are cleared with one sweep of the arm, shouting, damning, flouting, slamming, no one sleeps in the block. The entire neighborhood gets up. Ornery and yelling, they start outside, hurling rocks at cars. Police arrive and try to stop something. They make it worse. The anger gets hot and hotter, heating for a downtown showdown. National Guard men defend bank and business, but fall. The people burn City Hall. The governor declares an emergency. His mansion's in flames. The factories burn beside the rivers. State by state, the country blows up. Those left in the White House and Congress scream to no avail. Still yelping, they hop into the Potomac. It's me and you now, kid. You know, we do love each other. Let's go to bed, she says. We'll clean tomorrow.
Stephen Thomas is a Seattle poet, performance artist. Stephen Thomas, you heard at the top of the show on Kepler's conceptual art.
Joe is the most intellectually rigorous and critical of the poets that I'm aware of in Seattle. He's always pushing limits, intellectual limits, always questioning. And his word for his primary mode of attention when it comes to poetic activity is criticality, which I take to mean that he's interested largely in the context that a poetic work or a piece of art invents for itself or seeks to insert itself in, its sincerity, its authenticity. Joe is always very critical, and so he does stand outside the Seattle scene because he refuses to be one of the typical Yazagers, you know, who say, well, you know, politely say, well, that's very, very good. Joe is always challenging those writers whom he thinks are worth challenging to operate more intelligently, more authentically. Mm-hmm. He's an insider and an outsider, kind of a leader. He is extremely eclectic in his own work. He does conceptual pieces that involve nothing but letters. He paints. He does sumi work. He's extremely eclectic, and his work reflects that. His eclecticism, I think, as I said, is predicated on a desire to challenge everything and everyone. He doesn't like people to be set in their ways, and he certainly is himself not set in his ways, except insofar as he's extremely critical. has a stance which I believe sometimes forgets that there's heart as well as head involved in the whole creative enterprise.
Times change. Writing doesn't. Times change. Writing. Times change. Writing. Change writing. Times. Writing. Times. You're way off in another age. I'm here, way off in another age. We're both in our only age. Writing. Times. Writing. Writings change. Time doesn't. Early morning love. A gargoyle dream of cinema, then night at dawn at last. Ascend through love, with love, in love.
Joseph Kepler on the elements of his term criticality.
A sense of openness and a sense of criticism. And also looking inward, being able to criticize one's own criticism. It, I think, involves a sense of dissatisfaction with the way things are, the world of art, the way what passes for art, and what passes for life, concepts of life. There's that sense of dissatisfaction with the way things are, so with one's place in trying to grope through art, life. Its most important manifestation is that sense of not being satisfied with junk, not accepting art because someone says it's art, not accepting the mediocre, not suffering fools so easily, trying to probe and determine the difference between truthful, authentic art and art that comes more out of a person's need for ego fulfillment or for some sort of therapy, for well-intentioned motives, for the need to make a buck, for all different reasons.
Composition with sound. Band one. Controversy with the color blue. The color blue lands like a cloud. The rising, aspiring street lines through blue. Controversy. A composition in sound. You're the poet, I'm the audience. What are we doing? Get out of here, flies. What are you doing? What are they doing? The color blue, above and down the street. Tall, light architecture sets into the blue. The horizon, the lines on poles, the building squared on squares, the cars in rows and stacks. The people, here and there. Now's noise. They and you. You and me. A composition in sound. Controversy. With the color blue.
Trudy Mercer.
He's also an incredible critic. and that's where this word criticality comes in. He writes reviews and also causes discussions. He's done a number of small series and word of mouth kinds of things, and it's caused people to come together and present work and then allow discussion even during the performance.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a wonderfully unique way of getting artists together and presenting his own work. A nice concept to get people together, and that's why, I mean, fits in with Seattle, and yet he doesn't. These are not the kinds of things that the university presents or Elliott Bay Bookstore would do in their reading series, and yet he has been at both places to perform. The series he did at the Greenwood Galleries, where he brought together poets and composers, and that was actually the name of the series, and caused a number of people to come together and do work together, and yet a lot of them did work individually.
Stephen Thomas.
He writes for What magazine out of Toronto, for Contact 2 out of New York City, for Gargoyle, which I believe comes out of San Francisco. He's always being called upon to write reviews, and his reviews are generally intensely critical. He finds a lot of disappointment, as most people do, in what's offered as poetry, and they're contributed all over. So Joe has a more of a deep-seated sense of himself as a cosmopolitan, as somebody who's involved in the entire enterprise of poetry, as opposed to just, you know, the local scene, which again is something that makes him both an outsider and an insider, an outsider and a leader, I should say.
Landings. The world lets you down. The world lets you down. Two poems about Seattle. Seattle, prima donna of many excuses, all unacceptable, all accepted. Seattle architecture, tall banks, small library.
I was talking with Joe last Monday night. We met at a wedding of mutual friends, and I see Joe fairly frequently, but we were talking about a painting which Joe had made for this wedding. It consisted of a black background with six letters, the letters in the word love, L twice and E twice, arranged symmetrically. And we talked about it. He wanted to know what I felt of it. I mean, they had a showing of artwork as part of the celebration of their wedding, and Joe had been asked to contribute his painting, which was very simple, was right there. And I realized in speaking with him what I felt about the nature of that kind of work. It's conceptual work, which means that there's no room in it for sloppiness. First of all, it has to be perfectly realized. So the letters, which were very crisp, as though printed, were indeed, you know, perfectly realized. There's no room for sloppiness. And Joe took the time to do that, because that's one of the basis of conceptual art. Then he made it look very simple. The whole conception is very simple. Just L, two L's next to one another, and this maybe three and a half foot wide by 2 foot tall canvas, black background, white letters. Two L's on the top, O, V, one letter under each L, and two E's, one under O and one under V. The style was, I don't know, a kind of a modern variation on Times Roman, in which the E's and the O's were quasi-elliptical, and the ellipse was accentuated in the center, and it was leaning a bit to the onlooker's left. He got the angles right, so that all these ellipses that formed these the vowels were, you know, were right on. Okay. So there's the attention to detail, the respect that is shown to the onlooker, to the audience, to the those to whom the art is addressed. Then there's the appearance that it's very simple. You say, well, I could have done that. But then you didn't do that, and you're forced to realize that the reason you didn't do it is because you didn't think of it. Or even if you just thought of it, you didn't fix on it and follow it through. And what I mean by the conceptual, which is a thread that runs through Joe's work, is that it's a kind of art that draws your attention to the frame of mind which was necessary first to conceive and then follow through in the conception of the art. And the simplicity of the work brings that out. In fact, I think it's one of the necessary aspects of the work to make a piece of art truly conceptual. It has to look so simple that anyone could do it, because then they're thrown back upon themselves in a self-examining manner. And that is involved in a lot of what Joe does when he does sound poetry that consists in largely in the repetition of words or simple phrases. He challenges his audience to look at their own creative process. And that, I think, is probably the most characteristic thing about Joe Kepler, is that he's a challenger. He's always pushing. He's the sort of person who wants to make a community which would constantly delight him. And to that end, he's constantly prodding his friends, his acquaintances, his peers, to examine themselves, examine their work, and keep pushing, because so many of us are content. I shouldn't use us, because I don't want to put myself in that group, but I know I'm susceptible, as most people are, to the contentment that is, you know, that the death of art, with a particular style, with a particular manner. Oh, this works. Do it again. Oh, yeah, it worked a second time. Do it again. Of course, you stop. You don't notice that it really stopped working after the first time. Joe almost never buys that. He's always shoving. And that's what he contributes here and abroad, you know, with his criticism.
Language. Language. Gwidge. Gwidge. Language. Gwidge. Lan. Language. Lan. Gwidge. Sandwich. Which. San. Sandwich. Language. Language. Sandwich. Sand, land, guidge, witch, land, witch, sand, guidge, bacon, 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 language, bacon, sandwich. Mayonnaise, mayonnaise, bacon, sandwich, language, guid.
At least some of your art has been termed conceptual art.
Some of the work, sure, you know, there's been work that's functioned more on the conceptual level than its actual physical manifestation. The work, for instance, Slated for Demolition, there's a magazine titled Open Sky that was being published here. You're supposed to have 300 copies of your work, and then you put the 300 copies in 300 issues of the magazine, and it gets distributed. Well, Slated for Demolition was 300 different, you know, pages spread out in a long hall-like room, and the word Slated for Demolition sprayed on those sheets, and then that was collated into the magazine so that each person did receive something that was actually demolished. The pages, the way they were laid out, were, you know, architectural, and then the actual magazine, they put the person who had the magazine could only recognize it as a piece of a project. Likewise, Community was done the same way. It was a stack of paper that was cut and painted, and each person that received a copy of that became part of a community, whether or not they were aware of it. The way the 300 pages were cut had all these kind of
metaphors that were explained, you know, and were obvious to people who collated the magazine, but were not so obvious once it became dispersed in the magazine. And I think that community, that's the way community works at times. I mean, one may have a strong sense of community growing up, and then it's just dispersed. It's gone. One has it within oneself, but you know, it's not lived day to day. Now, those kinds of things, and then some of the artwork and the visual poetry and so forth are involved constantly. You know, the conceptual nature of the mind, the abstraction. So yeah, I would agree with that. That some of the work does rely on that. Conceptual art, you know, was a movement too. It has a history. It's not like it's a new field that's being discovered here. Conceptual art was prominent 20 years ago or so, and there's some fine work that was done in that. What I'm trying to do with conceptual art, I don't know, I think it's a little bit different than what was going on then, but maybe not. Maybe not. I tend to put the conceptual art of the past in a certain time frame, sort of as if it was in a box, and pull that from the shelf and would explain that, but that's not going to do anybody any good. Anybody could pull that box off and get the book themselves called Conceptual Art and check the references. I tend to put that in that 60s mentality, in the sense of the wow. And what I'm doing, I think, is more subdued, or tries to be more deeply felt, more deeply thoughtful. In other words, I'm not satisfied with the conceptual art that just presents an act of or a word or a decree of situation or sympathy or conundrum. Trying to do that plus something else. And that's how I'm trying to move off the older conceptual art. I'm not trying to work with that same sense of satisfied with the idea and having that. You know, it's not so much Zen-like, but moment of awareness. Those kinds of epiphanies are important. Yet trying to work out. Post-epiphany.
This is a poem entitled Time Does Not Exist. This is a poem entitled Time Does Not Exist. This is a poem entitled Time Does Not Exist.
Joseph Kepler, recorded in June, July, and August 88 in Victoria and Seattle, engineered August 23rd, 88, re-engineered September 20th, 1989. And so on. Now's Noise Now. I hope you've been in a place to hear his work, travel being mind travel. For him, I feel poetry is an act centered on the corners of freedom and imagination and community. I'll give you his address again if you'd like to contact him. It's Joseph Kepler, and that's K-E-P-P-L-E-R, 10254 35th Avenue Southwest, Seattle, Washington, 98146, USA. Again, Joseph Kepler, 10254 35th Avenue Southwest, Seattle, Washington, 98146, USA. And his telephone number is area code 206-937-8155. Next week, we'll hear selections from Poets, Painters, Composers No. 4, the tape issue, which features sonic creations by Henri Chopin, Linda Dowdell, Esther Sugai, Joseph Kepler, Jean-Paul Curtet, and others. I'm Jim Andrews. Thanks for listening to Fine Lines. We'll end with the beginning. Talk about crossing borders. The stuff of this poem sure does. Both ways. water from the sky.
Acid, 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 rain, acid, rain, rain, acid, rain, wood, acid, rain, fish, acid, rain, dove, acid, rain, buck, acid, rain, acid, rain, acid, 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 rain. Thank you.
Yeah.